All right, gentlemen, let's go ahead and pull ourselves together here this morning. It's good to see you, man. I'm glad we're all here together. Marv just handed me a flyer for the Creation Weekend that's coming up here at the end of, I guess, is it November 1st? It is. It's November 1st at the end of this month.
There will be one on every chair on Sunday.
Okay. Awesome. And are people supposed to sign up for this ahead of time?
No, it's a free event. Just come.
Okay.
But if they have children 4 years old and younger,
yeah,
they will need to register their kids so we know how many babysitters. But that's all. Otherwise, just come.
Okay. Very good. Well, that's coming up here in 3 weekends and should be a great time. So we'd encourage you guys to pay attention to that. I also want to let you know here this morning before we get going, just another prayer request that I would have for all of you, as you can be keeping me in your prayers, and actually Andy Van Slyke as well. He and I are heading over to Madagascar on Monday here, so in 2 or 3 days we're gonna head over that way. You all know Fally, love Fally, I do too. He called last week midweek, and he said, "Rich, I've got a really big problem." He had 3 speakers at his conference who essentially had all kind of backed out at the last minute for various reasons. One of them was disqualified from ministry, another one was ill. And so just, you know, that was just the sovereignty of God in some of those things. But he said, I don't know how this conference is going to go. Would you send me some recordings on YouTube for the conference? And I said, well, Fally, I'm nobody. You know, your conference isn't going to be successful by watching videos on YouTube of Rich Gregory, you know. And he said, well, would you consider coming over? And I said, well, that, yeah, I could do that. And that, you know, that would be helpful to you. So just be praying for that trip. That is a very important ministry. Just to remind you, in case you've forgotten, Fally is in a very strategic spot there in Madagascar. He is well-placed kind of in their association of churches. They've got several hundred churches all over that country, and he is kind of the leader of that denominational network. He is starting a seminary to train men to be able to accurately exposit and handle the Word of God, to begin pumping good, qualified pastors who know how to preach the truth into that pastoral network. But the key to that network is the seminary. The key to the seminary is this conference, because it's the conference that models expository preaching and drives enrollment for the seminary. So if there's no conference, or if the conference comes off the track, that's a very significant setback to him and to the gospel in that nation. And so as we were talking about that as elders, even though it's certainly not convenient to be heading over there right now, it is a good thing to be doing. And the scriptures tell us in Proverbs that if it's in your power to do good to whom it is due, do not withhold that from him. And so we looked at that and said this would be a good thing. And therefore, it's important for us to partner with our brother, whom we have committed to supporting in that way. So Andy's going to go with me. Very grateful for his willingness to travel along with me. But I would just encourage all of you men to be praying for us, that the ministry would be effective, that the Lord would preserve our health as we go. I went down that track last time. It's not fun. So we'll be more careful this time around, perhaps. Okay? So be praying for that. Did you have a question? Okay. All right. Okay, I saw a hand moving out of the corner of my eye and thought, that we're leaving Monday, coming back the following Sunday, so I'll be out of the pulpit a week from Sunday, okay? All right, very good. Well, let's go ahead and jump back into our material here. I'm going to pick up where we left off the last time that we were together here, okay? You know, I looked down at the clock the last time and realized that I had only 7 minutes to work you all the way through the process of identifying elders here at New Community Church and how all of that translates into practice here in the body. And I just thought, you know, it would be unwise and frankly unhelpful for me to try to stuff something that important into 7 minutes. And so I wanted to delay it to this week. And so what we'll do is just kind of work our way through this. I'll talk a little bit more about leadership, appointment to leadership. We'll work through what that looks like here at NCC. And if we have time left over at the end, can't promise that we will, but if we do, we'll make sure to take any questions that you have. And if, you know, that turns into questions on anything outside of this lesson, that's okay too. I don't mind answering questions for you guys, okay? So the last time we were together, which, by the way, there are no new notes this morning. You should have gotten that message as you came in. It's the same notes from last week, so you should be able to just use last week's notes. We'll finish those out. If you weren't here last week and you need notes, I think there were a few copies back there still. Okay, so last week we finished by looking at the different sorts of categories that we're looking for in church leadership. We talked about desire, we talked about character, we talked about aptitude, that means one's pastoral ability to lead, and then we talked about this idea of readiness as well. And that category of readiness really becomes very, very important. Because a man may be qualified in his character in that he's got a mature Christian walk, but that does not necessarily mean that he is ready for appointment to leadership in God's church. And I took you men to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 18 down through chapter 4, verse 5, and showed you that ultimately the standard that gauges a man's readiness is not the assessment of men. It is the assessment of Christ. It is an awareness that Christ is the one who ultimately stands as judge over the minister, and he is the standard to whom we are all accountable. And when you understand the reality that it's his bar that you are responsible to live up to in ministry, and that he is that perfect standard, suddenly a man who is truly ready, who understands the significance and the gravity of the standard to which he's going to be called, he's going to begin kind of backing away a little bit, aware of the significance and the gravity of that which he is undertaking. And it's going to be necessary, really, for other leaders in the church to come along behind him and push him forward into the work. So a man who is grasping, a man who is essentially approaching the work of leadership in the church saying, I got this, I got it figured out, does not actually understand the significance of the bar to which he has been called. Because if you're approaching church leadership saying, of course I'm ready, well, you're not, because you're not understanding the standard to which you've really been called. It's the standard of Christ by which you'll be judged. And that's what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 5. Each one will receive his commendation from God. So, chapter 3, verse 18, don't deceive yourselves into thinking that you are wiser than you really are. That's a very important part of this process. And I told you men the story of my experience as I was preparing to come here to New Community Church, as I was interacting with my dad and really struggling with this reality of, oh my goodness, you know, the time has come to jump off the cliff into pastoral ministry, but now that time has come, I'm terrified of doing that. And my dad, I don't know that I finished telling you the story. I remember sitting in his bedroom with him at his house in Sacramento, just really wrestling with what do I do here? And I remember him saying to me, son, it's because you're terrified of the prospect of the work that you're undertaking that I think that you should go. If you were not terrified of it, I would be telling you, take the off-ramp and don't go. But son, I am telling you that your life has been well prepared. You're walking with Christ. There's a qualification in character that's there. You've spent essentially 25 to 30 years preparing for pastoral ministry. God has clearly gifted and called you to this work. So I understand your fear. But if you don't go and you're called to go, just know God will chastise you. Well, Dad, if your objective was to put my mind at ease, you royally failed. but I think that helps you kind of see this idea that when a man is ready, there is going to be a natural fear and hesitation there because he understands to whom he ultimately is accountable. That's God himself. So as long as a man is proclaiming himself to be ready, we have a problem. But when a man backs away and says, the standard is so very high, and I am insufficient on my own, that's actually a great marker of genuine readiness, okay? Now, there's a fine line. You say, well, now, wait a minute. How does that interface with this idea of aspiration? Right? I mean, the very first thing you said was you have to have a desire for it, and now you're telling me that you need to not have a desire for it. Like, how do those things work together, right? It's a fair question. The process begins with you having an innate desire in your heart. He who desires the office of overseer, 1 Timothy 3:1 says, desires a good thing. And so there's kind of this internal drive and desire to say, I have a desire to impact the body of Christ. But when push comes to shove, there also is a natural fearfulness that goes with that when you're truly understanding what exactly that will mean. And it's not until the rest of the body of leadership in the church affirms you in that desire and gives you that nudge, like my dad did for me and like the elders of the church have here for me, that no, you are ready and the Lord has called you to this. And we see that clearly, that then you're able to proceed. There's that checking influence by other godly men in your life that is very, very important. Okay, and so that's really where we left off the last time. I didn't get to fully flesh that out because we were running out of time, but I wanted to make sure that some of that was seen. It's very important here to understand, guys, because a lot of different churches, ministries, pastors essentially ascribe to a model of ministry and leadership in the church that could be described as a model of self-appointment to leadership, okay? Leaders are not self-appointed. You don't get to identify yourself as a leader in the church and then make yourself a leader in the church and say, let's go. There are many people who will say, oh, I'm called by God to be a church planter, so I'm going to go plant a church. And so they do. And they do that on their own, without any kind of oversight from a governing body of elders or the plurality of and the benefit of the wisdom of a plurality of elders or an ordination or appointment into the work of Christ. It's just, I feel called to go plant a church, and so I am going to go do that. That's problematic because you cannot appoint yourself into church leadership. That is a function of the leadership of God's church. Churches plant churches, and churches identify the leadership of those churches. But if you're in a place where you're appointing yourself as the leader of a church, and the rest of the body is not involved in that appointment through the leadership of that body, well, that's outside of God's design for how leadership in the life of the church is intended to function. Okay? Leaders don't appoint themselves. They are identified by the plurality of other godly leaders in the life of the church. And so I think that's really important to take notice of. You say, well, where do you get that from? There's a number of places, but a couple that I would just point your attention to is 1 Timothy chapter 3. It talks about, whoops, I'm going the wrong direction. 1 Timothy chapter 3 talks about the importance of new leaders being first tested in ministry. Down in verse 10, this is in the context of deacons, but these are really principles that apply to all of church leadership. It says, let them also be tested first, where there's a process whereby a man is thoroughly qualified in his life and is tested not only in his doctrine, but also in his character and in his pastoral aptitude, right? So you can't test yourself and approve yourself. You are to be a workman that is approved by God, Paul will go on to instruct Timothy. And the way that approval by God to undertake the work is known is as God's church brings to bear the wisdom of the scripture and tests you and pours your life through the grid of the text to ensure that you're walking in a way that's worthy of him. Okay, so you can't do that for yourself. That only happens as the leadership of the church is engaged in your life. Another evidence of that, this idea that would militate against a sense of self-appointment, would come out of Titus chapter 1, verse 7 talks about, again, the qualifications for ministry. An overseer as God's steward must be above reproach. He must not be, and then what's the very first listing there of character qualities? He must not be what? Arrogant. And literally in the text, that word means he is not self-willed. Right? He has demonstrated a capacity to submit himself, his life, his ministry to the oversight of godly, other ordained leaders. He's not self-willed in that he's putting himself forward. The only way that you're able to be part of a plurality of elders is as you have first demonstrated a willingness to submit yourself to the plurality of elders. But until you see the benefit and the beauty and the wisdom of having multiple elders that are all working together on ministry and really on your life, until you see the benefit of that and have experienced the benefit of that and have submitted yourself to it, you're not ready to be part of it, okay? And that's part of the importance of this principle. You can't say, I'm ready, so here we go. No, it's the plurality of leaders that God has raised up in his church who must look at your life and say, you're ready, and whether you like it or not, we're going. That's the way that it's supposed to work, okay? So I want to make sure that that's clear as well here. Now, one other clarification before we get into what this looks like here at New Community Church is the distinction between pastors and elders. You say, is there a distinction between pastors and elders? Biblically, is a pastor an elder? Is an elder a pastor? Are those two separate things, or are they different things? How does that work? Okay, in the text of Scripture, there is no distinction between a pastor and an elder. Both of them, occasionally there's a reference to pastor, occasionally there's a reference to elder, but both of them are expected to be shepherds. Their role, their function is the same in the life of the church. Pastors are elders, elders are pastors, biblically defined. The expectation for both are synonymous, and therefore they are the same thing. There's just some different titles that are used there to emphasize different functions of the role of pastor/elder in the life of the church. And that role fundamentally is to shepherd the flock of God that is amongst you. So pastors are responsible to shepherd, elders are responsible to shepherd, and there really is no distinction or division in those roles. Pastors are elders, and elders are pastors. Okay, now, having said that, there is biblical precedent and priority for facilitating and enabling certain elders/pastors to be freed up from the distractions of kind of an occupational life to be able to focus exclusively on the work of ministry. Okay? So we do have paid staff pastors who are freed up from the work of having to go out and do work out in a secular workplace, so that their work can be exclusively devoted to the work of ministry. And you see Paul talking about that. To those who are diligent in the teaching and the study of the word, make sure that there's honor given to them. There's definitely a precedent for that kind of work in the New Testament. But not all elders are staff pastors. You know, here at New Community Church, we have a number of lay elders who have taken on really a second job named ministry to their first job, which is providing for their families. And that doesn't make them any less of a pastor, and it shouldn't in your sight. It doesn't make them any less of an elder or a spiritual leader. In fact, in my mind, it elevates their role in the life of the church, because these are men who have all the pressures and stresses of a regular job and life out in the world, who are then, once they've closed the books and punched out on the clock, coming into the life of the church saying, now let's roll up our sleeves and go back to work, which really is something that all of us should be grateful for, that we have godly men who are willing to give of themselves in their limited spare time to meet the needs of the church. Okay, so that's the distinction between elders and pastors. So ultimately, if a man is a pastor on the staff of the church, that means that he must be qualified to be an elder. And once he has proven himself ready for the work of eldership, and there is the commensurate maturity for that office, then he will be appointed to the office of an elder. Okay, so if a man is a pastor, but his life is not qualified to be an elder, he can't stay as a pastor here. Okay, that's very important to understand, because if he's not qualified as an elder, he can't be a pastor. But at the same time, a man can be a pastor for a period of time while he is in the process of developing into that of an elder, demonstrating his readiness, his fitness, his aptitude. We're willing to bring men onto our pastoral staff to function in a way that is pastoral, with the ultimate aim of seeing them become elders, but we're not going to rush them into eldership just because they're on the pastoral staff. No, they still need to go through the same process. Being on pastoral staff means we believe your life is qualified, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we believe you're fully ready to assume the office of an elder. Once you've demonstrated that kind of maturity, fitness, readiness, aptitude, then we will advance you through the process. But that may take time. And in the meantime, you can still function pastorally because you've been delegated authority from the elders to fulfill a shepherding role and obligation in the life of the church. Okay? So the fact that we have pastors who are not yet elders does nothing to threaten or damage this understanding that in the scriptures, pastors and elders are seen as being synonymous in the same thing. Okay? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yes? It's early. Okay, very good. All right, so those are some statements of clarification that I wanted to make as relates to desire, character, aptitude, readiness. Those categories are really very important. So now let's turn the corner a little bit here and just talk about what this process for elder development looks like here in the life of New Community Church. And now I think we're actually ready to make some progress, Terry. He's been back there on the slide with an itchy trigger finger, like, would you just get back to the material? Okay, here we are, all right? So the first step in this process, really, at NCC is what we call our discipleship curriculums, where we want to build platforms here in the life of the church where men are able to grow in Christ-likeness. That's why The Forge, for instance, is the tagline of it is building men of conviction and character who know how to disciple others. You cannot make progress down the road towards becoming a leader in the life of the church until you first are becoming like Christ yourself and until you have learned how to help others become like Christ, which is why these discipleship programs that we have, like The Forge, like Pastor Jerry's Saturday morning study, like our small group structure, like our equip classes, are all intentionally designed to pour the mind of Christ into the body at a broad level so that generally the men in the church particularly will be raised up to have a mentality to say, my goal is to look as much like Jesus Christ as I can today, and my secondary goal is to make sure that I am helping all of you look just like Jesus Christ too. Okay, that fundamentally is the fabric or the foundation of what spiritual leadership looks like in the life of the church. And it's why we put such an emphasis on this idea of discipleship. You cannot be a leading disciple until you first have become a good disciple. And a good disciple seeks to make other disciples. And so the first step, really, in our thought process as the elders, as we think through how do we begin developing future leaders in the life of the church, begins in a room just like this one, where we're seeking to instill in you men a thorough, fundamental, foundational understanding of what it is to be a disciple and what it looks like to make disciples. Because that's where leadership is born. And that's what we're doing here. So at the broadest level, you can think about this almost like a pyramid. The process of elder development begins in all of the discipleship level opportunities that we've woven through the life of the church, this being one of them. Are you a good disciple and are you making other disciples? That's where it starts. From there, we kind of go up a level and we talk about teacher training. Okay, the one qualification of an elder that really is distinct from just general Christian maturity, that is distinct from a deacon, for instance, the one qualification of an elder is that he be able to teach or apt to teach, depending on your translation. Okay, an elder is someone who knows how to take the word of God and effectively explain it to others and see it applied to their life. It's not just that he knows the truth. That is an important part of it. And it's not just that he knows how to apply the truth, it's that he is skilled in knowing how to come alongside you and help you apply the truth. Okay. So the second kind of step in our process here is to take men from a place of general discipleship to a place where they have facility and ability in the area of training. We seek to equip men to be effective teachers of the truth. And this is something that we're going to be starting actually next spring, kind of a teacher training crash course to begin helping you men who have a desire to teach and the ability to teach learn how to do that more effectively. And if that's something that you've got an interest in, well, we're always looking for more teachers, but we want to make sure that those teachers are first qualified. One of the things that we've learned from other churches is that you don't just, you know, in order to identify teachers, you don't just throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. You don't just send a man out into the live fire range and say, well, here's a class, let's see what you can do with it. No, you got to give him some education and some instruction and some training in how to be effective in the doing of it. And thereby, through an educational process, get an understanding of can he actually do this or not before you ever subject the poor people of the church to that teaching. Okay, so that's really something we're working on. We'll be developing it here in the spring. And if that's something that you've got interest in being a part of, send me an email or let me know. That's not so much kind of just, hey, everybody who wants to come. That's something that I want to be able to have direct conversation with those of you who are interested in to make sure that the right people are in the opportunity like that. Yeah, Tony. That's a great example. Teaching in the church is not like American Idol. If you can't sing, don't try. That's not true in worship. You should always sing, no matter if you can sing or not, in worship. But in teaching, if you can't sing, don't try. I like that. That's good. Okay? So that's kind of the second step that helps us identify leaders in the life of the church. Sometimes it's easy for churches to say, well, who do we have that is qualified as an elder? And then they pull out the list of all the men in the church and the names in the church. And they begin going down the list saying, well, I like him. He's a good guy. He's been successful over here, so surely he'd be successful over there. Or maybe it's a little better than that. Maybe it's, okay, who of our men are specifically qualified in character for the work of ministry? Well, the problem with that approach is that you're starting out way too broad, right? Because you haven't identified which of the men in our church whose lives are qualified are able to actually teach. Because if they can't teach, what are we talking about here? You can't pass go, you can't collect your $200 if there's not the ability to teach. So what you need to do in the identification of leaders is first make sure that men understand what it is to be a disciple and to make disciples. Then make sure that they've been trained to teach if they've got the desire to teach. And once they've been trained to teach and you're looking at the teachers of the church, the people who are already doing the work of teaching, which is part of the work of being an elder, then you look at that more limited body of people and you say, okay, which of these men specifically? So now we've gone from, let's say we've got 500 men at New Community Church. I think it's something like 420 actually. We got 420 men. All right, we've got 100 men who are in discipleship. We've got, let's say, 30 men who are teachers in the life of the church. Well, when I go to look and identify future leaders and elders in the life of New Community Church, which of those buckets am I looking at? 420? No. Am I looking at the men who understand what it is to be a disciple? Well, I mean, yes, you need to be in that bucket, but there's a smaller bucket yet, and that's who are the men who are qualified to teach, because that's a fundamental qualification for eldership. All right, so maybe there's 30 men who are qualified, able, ready to teach. Now, of those 30 men, that is where we're going to look to see which of these men have the kind of character and qualification and readiness and aptitude to actually be a pastor, shepherd, elder in the life of New Community Church. So the scope goes from this down to this. And it's all based exclusively, essentially, on the fitness of their discipleship and their capacity as a teacher. That's not where the qualification process ends, by the way. That's where that qualification process begins. Okay? And once we've seen a man demonstrate those abilities, then now we get down into this next stage of development. which is really where we talk about developing actual leaders and elders in the life of the church. Now, what we're doing here, let me make sure I'm being really clear, is to observe and to identify God's men. I cannot, despite my greatest attempts, make a man an elder. Either he is one and he functions as one, or he is not. But I can't make him to be an elder. I'm simply trying to identify who are the men that God has raised up in the life of his church, in their maturity and their ability to be an elder. Okay, so we're seeking to identify, not create. One of the most important pieces of pastoral advice that I have ever received from anybody, and I've received it over and over and over again from pretty much every pastor that I respect, is this advice. At this stage of the game, when you're trying to identify leaders in the life of the church, whatever you do, young Padawan learner, that's what they've said to me, do not rush this. Do not rush this. Do not go too fast. There is nothing better than a godly plurality of elders that are submitted to the sanctification of God's Spirit. And there is nothing worse than a plurality of elders that are not submitted to the sanctification of God's Spirit. And so until you are absolutely sure that a man is an elder, do not appoint him into leadership. Pastor MacArthur would tell me, as I was working with him, Rich, the fastest way to mess up a church is to appoint a man into leadership prematurely. So until you're absolutely confident that this man is an elder confirmed by the church and ordained by God for the undertaking of this work, don't do it. You may be under immense pressure to do it. You may think that it's the right time. You may think, we're pretty close, so let's go ahead. No, until you know for sure that he is ready, do not do it. My grandfather used to tell me, do not take shortcuts in this process. He would say, if a man pushes on the door, if he's trying to bang it down, do not let him in. He's not ready. He is automatically delayed and disqualified for a period of time if he's trying to leverage his way into leadership. That's what my grandfather taught me. And the reason why is because there's so much at stake here in the life of the church. Unity in the body largely will flow from unity in the leadership. But if the leadership is disunified, what do you think the body's going to look like? It's going to take on the nature, tenor, and character of its leadership. And so if the elders can't be unified, well then, how can you expect the people to be unified? And if the people aren't unified, Jesus says, I will come and snuff out your lampstand. Revelation chapter 2 and 3. So there is a critical nature to ensuring that before a man is brought into leadership at this level, he is ready for that. So you say, okay, I understand the importance of it, but practically speaking, how do you actually identify that? Well, the way that we do that here at NCC is through a process whereby our elders really every 6 months have a leadership review where we look at those men who are evidencing active discipleship, evidencing the capacity to teach, have been trained in how to teach. And then we begin to think about those men as being really in three different categories. We've got an observation stage, a developmental stage, and an onboarding stage. Right? In that observation stage, these are men that we're looking at saying they're probably 3 to 5 years out from actually being ready to engage in the leadership of the church. This means that these are men who are able to teach, their character, as all from what we can see, is qualified, and they are actively developing in their pastoral competencies, okay? And we want to see all those things progressing to see active evidence of sanctification made clear over a span of time before we begin to proceed with them, okay? So that's what we're looking for there in those kind of 3 to 5 years, in that first 3 to 5 year stage. And right now, I would say we probably have 5 men in that bucket that, you know, we're observing and watching their life, their doctrine, their teaching very carefully. In this stage, by the way, I'll tell you, we don't actually tell those men that they're being observed. We're just watching to see how they engage in the life of the church in a pastoral capacity, how they engage in the work of teaching, and whether or not we see the evidences of qualification in their life. That's kind of the first bucket that we kind of keep track of. Second bucket would be kind of 1 to 3 years, and this is more of an active developmental stage. We're here at this point, we're beginning to give them really significant shepherding issues, really significant discipleship cases, counseling cases, because we want to see, are they growing in their pastoral competency? Can they handle any pastoral counseling issue in the life of the body with a certain excellence and facility that's grounded in the text? And so we're wanting to actively develop them by giving them opportunities to show and demonstrate that they're ready to function as an elder, because they are functioning as elders. I would say right now we've got 2 men here in the church that are in that stage. They may or may not be told at this point that they're under observation. At some point during this kind of period, within this 1 to 3 year range, they will be told. But this is really the point at which we begin to actively invest in relationship with them, get to know them, and give them opportunity to prove their ability as an elder. Okay, that's kind of how that one works. And then the final stage is kind of within a year, where we look at a man and say, okay, this man is within 12 months of actually being able to be an elder. He's proven his capacity to shepherd. He's proven his ability to teach. He's proven the qualification of his character. And so now we're going to get really serious about actually onboarding him over the next year as an elder, so that when he steps onto that elder board, he is ready to function well, and it's a smooth transition, because essentially he's already been functioning as an elder in the life of the church. Okay, and at this stage now, in this last phase, a man is going to be actively moving through what we call the elder process. And right now we have 1 man working his way through this process at this stage. So that kind of gives you an idea of where we're at here at New Community Church. I know a lot of you kind of look at this and you think to yourselves, I see the fact that there's a few of you as elders. How, you know, we need more of them. How do we get more of them? And I would just encourage you to say, we are very much aware of the fact that we need more elders, but we're also very much committed to not rushing this so that we don't mess up the church. And so we're going to take our time, and if that means we feel the burn in the meantime while we need more elders but don't have them, that's okay. The Lord will provide, and He is, as I just explained to you. We've got men in each of these categories moving through the process. And so the issue is a short-term issue, but it's certainly not because we're not paying attention or don't have a desire to see leaders raised up in the life of the church. No, we're actively working towards that, but we're going to take our time and make sure that when a man becomes an elder, he's truly ready to function well at that level. And we're confident in his success in that undertaking and endeavor. Okay, so what does that elder process look like? All right, well, that's what the backside of this page is. This is really the process that begins when we say this man is within a year of being ready. Okay, and here is the process that a man would work his way through in that year. And right now, I told you is in that process is in step number 7. I believe. So there are 10 different stages to this process. The first stage, and I don't need to read this whole document because I know you guys know how to read, so you can do that for yourself. I'll just walk you through at a high level. It really is aspiration. Does he have a desire? Let's begin by really engaging this man intensively on the nature of his desire. What are his motives? Why is he desiring it? Does he understand the stakes of what is at stake here? And the elders will approach that man. Sometimes that man may approach the elders and just say, I've really got a burning desire to help lead and shepherd. I've been doing it. You've seen me doing it. And the Lord has really laid it on my heart to do more of this. And so it begins with examining his desire. There's an initial review there where the elders, at this point, the elders have already heard this man's teaching, because he's gone through the teacher training process already. But we take, as part of the formal process, a formal step is to actually distribute one of his teachings and actually listen to it and review it and make sure, no, we're confident that this man can be effective in his teaching. And so that's what that initial review is. And once we've heard his teaching and all agreed, no, this man can teach, then we make a recommendation to that man that he would continue, indicating that he's been tested and proven in ministry, 1 Timothy 3:10. Okay, once that's happened, then he fills out an application packet that includes a number of different pieces. Most of that is a man working through a little booklet that walks through the qualifications for ministry, and it's probably, that booklet's maybe 30 pages long, where he kind of takes the qualification passages word by word and looks at them, and looks at his life and the text and his life, and compares and contrasts and really prays through that and works through that to see where he's at in his qualification and fitness for the role. Once he's completed that application, he gives that back to the board. We review that application, read through it. We call outside references at that point, which may look like other references in the church. It may look like references in other previous churches, and it will also look like references out in this man's workplace. Because one of the qualifications of an elder in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 is that he be well thought of outside of the church. To make sure that he's not just presenting a front on Sundays to you, but no, in general, his life is one of integrity, where even an unbeliever would say, no, he's a good guy. And we see that, okay? And we take all that under consideration as well. Once that's happened, then there's a formal interview that takes place with the rest of the elders where a candidate will give his testimony, and the board will have an opportunity to basically ask that man anything that they're curious about from his application, or about his spiritual life, or about his walk with the Lord. And that gets pretty intensive and dialed in there, just as a man is answering questions and we're seeking to examine him. Who are you? And are you ready? Okay, so we're doing everything that we can from a human perspective to make sure that a man's life lines up with the text. By the way, we don't take a man through this process until we're like 99% sure that he's going to be able to finish the process. So before a man ever gets into this final year's process, there's already been ample opportunity for us to witness his testimony, his sanctification, his walk, his life. And there's a high level of confidence that, no, this man already is an elder. We're just simply going through this process to verify and affirm the reality of what God has already demonstrated. But that doesn't mean that we're going to slack off in the process as we're going through it. Just because we're pretty sure he's going to make it doesn't mean we pull any punches here, okay? Once that interview has happened, then the man goes through a period of preparation that could take as much time as he would need to prepare, because there is a very thorough theological examination that he must fill out. That's step 8. That covers everything that we've been talking about here in the Forge over the last 3 years, from hermeneutics to eschatology to everything in between. We want to make sure that a man who becomes an elder knows his Bible, knows what he believes, is capable of defending it, and is able to give an answer for the hope that lies within him, as the scriptures say. So that is what happens there in the examination phase. That is really an open book exam. My goal is not to trip a man up at this point and make sure that he knows absolutely everything. My goal is to make sure that he fundamentally knows where to find the right answers and can make those answers be inherently biblical. Because when a man gets asked a question on the life of the church, there are questions that people will ask me where I'm like, oh man, I don't actually know the answer that off the top of my head. I'm going to have to think about it. So it's not so important to me that a man know every answer off the top of his head, as much as it is important that a man be able to get the right answer after thinking about it, and know where to point people back to in the text. Okay, so that's the purpose of that exam, is to see, does this man know his Bible, and can he adequately answer questions that will come at a theological level from the life of the body? Once he's been thoroughly examined at a theological level, at a spiritual level, at a lifestyle level, only then is he recommended to the church. Okay, and that's when we would now make that man's name public and say, so-and-so has gone through the elder process. We believe that he's qualified. And if any of you now have any perspective concerns based on what you know of this man, about him becoming an elder, this is your opportunity to come tell us. We give the church a month to be able to come and give us any concerns that they have. And only after we've either worked through those concerns or received no concerns would we move ahead with confirmation, where we lay hands on a man, pray over him in the assembly, and officially install him as an elder. Okay, so that is what that process looks like from start to finish in the actual elder process, but hopefully that gives you a better understanding of what leads up to a man being put in that elder process. You say, why in the world did we just spend 45 minutes, or, well, today, an hour last time, 2 hours, two sessions talking about this? Well, guys, it's my hope that all of you, okay, would be actively pursuing Christian maturity, which is what's portrayed for us in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1. And so I think it's very important to hold out the expectation of what leaders in the church should be, because it's the job of a leader to say to everybody else in the church, you follow me as I'm following Christ. And so my hope, my desire is that there may be many of you who are saying, well, I don't aspire to eldership in the church. And that's just fine. But you can't not aspire to maturity in the life of the church. That's fundamental Christianity 101. And so it's important to see God's standard for leadership, because that's God's standard for all of you. Now, whether or not you function or desire to be a leader, that's beside the point. But it's important that you see the standard, because that is the goal for you as much as it is for me. And that's why we're emphasizing that, or at least it's the first reason. The second reason why is because I realize that there may be some of you who do aspire to leadership in the life of this church. And you do have a desire, even though you may be a little fearful, to say, I do desire to take on more and to be active in the service of Christ and the leadership of his body. Well, I don't want you to be confused. I don't want this to be some kind of mystery where you're wondering, like, how does it happen? I have no idea. It's just kind of like the door opens and people walk through, and then the door shuts and nobody gets through. I don't know how it happens. No, I don't want this to be some kind of mystery or kind of secret behind the scenes where you don't know. I want you to have a clear understanding of this is the pathway, so that you can pursue that as the Lord lays that on your heart. But I also want everybody to understand, because you may be sitting here this morning saying, well, I don't aspire to this in any way, but I am kind of curious, because the life of the church largely depends upon the nature of its leadership. So how are leaders appointed or made in the life of the church? I think it's important for you to know and have confidence in the fact that we are doing everything that we can to design a system and a program by which we are able to, insofar as it depends upon us at a human level, walk in dependency on the Lord to raise up leaders, but there is a thorough process of qualification that a man goes through as he walks down that road. We're not just randomly or haphazardly slapping labels onto men and saying, well, we need help, so come on. No, there's a multi-year process of development, proving, and qualification that men need to go through. And I think it's very healthy for even those of you who don't aspire to that work to understand what that looks like, so that you can have confidence when we bring a man before you as a prospective leader, deacon, elder, he has gone through a thorough process of examination and testing. Okay, so that's why we're spending so much time on this, because it's so critically important to the life of the church. Okay? Questions? Yeah, Christian. Yeah, so that's a great question. There is not a magic number in that there is not a biblical statement on that. I would say, for me, we go back to this idea of what an elder is. He's intended to be a shepherd, and a church is meant to care for and shepherd every member of the flock. And so the number of elders that you need is largely going to be answered on, well, how many do you need in order to adequately shepherd the needs of the body? Now, in church ministry, there's kind of a general rule of thumb that if you have fewer than one elder for every 100 attendees, you probably need more elders. Because for one man to adequately be able to know, be involved in, and shepherd 100 people, well, that's a pretty high task. But if you're being called on as an elder to really know and shepherd 150, 200 people, well, that at some point just becomes practically impossible to do. So 1 to 100 is kind of the, I guess you could say, industry standard in ministry circles. But I would say in certain seasons of the life of the church, right now, we actually have a greater ratio than that. We're not at 1 to 100 because we don't have the elders that we need, and that's one of the metrics that we know. Like, guys, we really need to be developing more and paying attention, being very intentional with this, because we need more shepherds, because the Lord has grown our church. But just because we need more doesn't mean we're going to shortcut things and just start appointing men saying, well, he's halfway through, let's just make it happen. No, we're all going to feel the burn together of having to work, you know, go into overdrive, but we're not going to rush it. Okay, but there may be seasons in the life of the church too where you look at it and you say, we've got more elders than 1 to 100. Maybe we've got 500 members and we've got 10 elders. Well, praise God. You know, people are getting even an even better level of care. So there's not a set figure. It's not, you know, based on any kind of ratio. There is a general ratio that says if you don't have this, you need to think about it. And we're aware of that. But really, it's how are we going to effectively address and meet the needs of our body? And how many men do we need to do that? And that's kind of how we think about it. But at the end of the day, the Lord is the one who raises them up. And so I can't set a target and say, you know, by 2027, we're going to have 11 elders because that's the ratio. Well, that's not how it works. You have to be sensitive and walk in dependency on the Spirit of God and the work that he's doing in the lives of the men of the church. Okay, good question. Yeah.
Do you assign members to an elder? In other words, an elder has certain...
Okay. We don't. Yeah, some churches do. We don't. There's been a little bit of history at New Community Church where that had been done in the past, and it worked effectively for a while. Up until it didn't, and then there were some significant problems that were caused by that. Because if one elder ends up demonstrating that he's not really qualified for ministry, well, now he's got 100 people who are attached to him, and that can really be problematic. So we don't do that, at least not right now. It's more of an organic, guys, let's all get connected to the life of the body, and before you become an elder, we need to see your active relational engagement with people in the body, so that at an organic level, and in elder meetings, you'll see this, if you ever were to be in an elder meeting, you know, we'll talk through kind of the membership of the church and where the needs are and who needs attention, or will be an issue come up and it'll be, okay, who knows this person? And invariably, you know, some people may not know them really at all, but other people say, well, I know them. Okay, well, then you go and talk to them, right? There's always some kind of relational connection because all of our elders are engaging relationally. Okay. But when we get to a point where there's an issue that comes up and we're all saying, okay, who knows this person? Nobody? Well, okay, that's a sign that, you know, we need to do a little bit more work here. Or perhaps we really need some more elders because we're kind of bumping into a situation where there's uncovered people in the body's shepherding life. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, done. Yeah. So I would say I think in our membership documents we have a written policy that a man cannot be an elder for at least a year after coming to New Community Church. In practice, I would say we don't typically begin considering men for eldership until about 2 to 3 years once we've seen it, and then it's a multi-year process from there. So I would say it really, 5 years is the minimum. 5 to 10 is going to be more the norm. You don't just wait till the last minute. There is an intentional process that happens over time. Okay? Other questions? Yeah, Ethan.
Can you describe the difference between the ability to teach
Yeah.
and the ability to preach? Because you do have some elders that don't necessarily
preach. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. So preaching is the declarative, authoritative proclamation of God's word that demands a response. Okay, so when I get up and preach, it is slightly different from teaching because I am calling for all of you to take this and do something with it. And if you don't heed the word that has now come from God through his word, you are disobedient. Right, that's the nature of preaching. If you listen to a sermon and you don't respond, either the preacher did not do his job, or you are being disobedient. Right, that's preaching. Okay, there is an inherent intuitive response that is demanded to the text by the authoritative proclamation of it. That's preaching. This is not my word. This is God's word. It is his message to you. And as the hearer, you are bound to respond. Okay, that's what preaching is. Teaching is more the presentation of truth. It's the consideration of truth. And so it's, I'm going to present to you a lesson on the nature of this material. So that's what I'm doing this morning. I'm not preaching right now. I'm teaching. I'm just simply presenting to you information about what leadership in the life of the church is and how this process works here at New Community Church. You don't have to like walk out of here and say, I'm going to aspire to ministry. Now, the teaching may result in that, but I'm not calling for a response. I'm not demanding. God is not demanding that you walk forth from here and do something with this. Okay, that's the difference between preaching and teaching. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Andy.
Within the context of teaching.
Yeah.
You have a gift.
Yep.
It is seen as a gift.
Yep.
But you're limited to first grade instead of senior high school.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would say every church has a different standard of what qualifies a man to be a spiritual leader and elder when it comes to that obligation to be able to teach. Here, we have drawn the line at you need to at least be able to teach in a middle/high school context or older, okay, in an equipped class context. So a man could be an elder and not be really capable of stepping into the pulpit to be able to preach. Because he can still teach in an equipped class and be effective. If a man is capable of teaching in a first grade classroom, but he's not really capable of teaching adults, well, he's not going to be qualified to be an elder here in the life of the church. And that's really the standard that we've kind of chosen and selected, is that you need to be able to teach in a middle school classroom. Now, what are we looking for in that teaching to be able to mark it and say, now that's effective teaching? Number one, can you be clear? Do people walk away scratching their heads like, what in the world was he talking about? Or do they understand? Well, I understand what he was saying, and I understand it better now because he said it. Can you be clear? Number two, can you be compelling? Are you able to hold people's attention for whatever the chosen period of time is for that teaching, whether that's 30 minutes, 45 minutes? I mean, it's hard for me to hold people's attention beyond even 50 minutes. That's just challenging. But can you be compelling in that people are wanting to stay with you, or after 5 minutes, are they like, oh, please let me go home and eat lunch? All right, so clear and compelling are kind of the two kind of criteria that we're looking for in a man being able to teach, which, you know, the third one then would be accuracy. Does he know the truth well enough to be able to state it accurately? Or is he in a context where people are not only confused, but they're saying, I don't think that's actually right? So those are kind of the three big picture criteria for what makes teaching effective, and he needs to be able to do those three things in a context that is middle school and above. Does that answer the question? Okay. Yeah, Chris.
So when you were talking earlier about self-appointed leaders, how would you draw a line of distinction between the church planting context?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I would say there's when I say a man cannot be a self-appointed leader, I'm talking about in the life of the church specifically. Okay. Not in a workplace environment. You know, if you've got colleagues who want to read the Bible over lunch, go for it. Please do that. That'd be awesome. Just step up and lead. But when it comes to the actual appointment to the office of leader in the life of the church, you don't get to appoint yourself. Okay? Yeah, Christian.
Given the similarity between the requirements of a deacon and an elder,
mm-hmm.
would it either officially or unofficially be a prerequisite for someone at NCC to be a deacon before there?
No. Deacons, the nature of their role is fundamentally different in Scripture than the role of an elder. So deacons are not like miniature, premature elders. They have a God-ordained function that is appointed by him to do a specific task, and they're not less than elders. Okay, both of those functions are essential in the life of the church. They're just different. And this is not a prerequisite for that. Now, sometimes a man becomes a deacon, and you see the qualification of his life, and he's serving faithfully, and you say, man, you're clearly qualified to be a deacon. And then he demonstrates the ability to teach as he's a deacon. And you say, you know, we need to move you over here into this work of shepherding, because any, you know, there's a lot of people who could do that work of facilitating ministry, but there's not a lot that can do this, the work of shepherding, so we're going to move you. But that's not a necessary step or prerequisite to eldership, okay? Because the nature of the roles is very distinct and different. Both very essential, but very different, okay? Guys, it's 7:30. If you need to go, go. Tony, I'll take one more question from you, and then we'll wrap it up. let me walk you through that, okay, the next time that we're together, okay? I will not be here next Friday. Jerry will be, but then I will be back the following week, and I'll address that then. I think that's our last week, okay? You recommend Pastor Jerry? I love it. Yeah, well, Pastor Jerry is already an elder, right? So in the truest sense of the word, in that he is a shepherd. All right, very good. Thank you, gentlemen.